This is Conor Lennon from UN News. The growth of anti-Semitism worldwide is a sign that other forms of hatred and xenophobia are becoming more destructive and widespread. The UN Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Religion or Belief, Ahmed Shahid, warned on Friday. When I spoke to Mr. Shahid, a former foreign minister for the Maldives, he also explained what his role as a special rapporteur entails, what drives him to speak out about human rights abuses, and the recent elections to the Human Rights Council. Mr. Shahid began by confirming that the global rise in anti-Semitic violence is significant and worrying.
If you look at some of the data published, we see at a global level a rise of some 38% from last year, from previous year to the current year. That's the mega statistics. But of course, these are misleading because not much data is collected. But there is evidence from different contexts that in each context, there is a rise in anti-Semitism, both objective incidents and the subjective fear that many Jewish communities feel around the world.
And what are the main reasons?
Well, you know, anti-Semitism has been long known as a canary in the coal mine of global hate, of hatred. So when things start to go wrong, the first signs you get are signs of anti-Semitism. So we've seen a global surge, a global tsunami of hatred, as it's called in June. So in that context, we've seen rising xenophobia, rising scapegoating, conspiracy theories. All these are, stuff that anti-Semitism is made up of. And we have the online dimension, which is feeding globally a surge of hatred. And again, anti-Semitism is part of that.
Canary in the coal mine, as you said, it indicates that hate generally is becoming more of a problem.
Absolutely. I think we're seeing around the world different forms of hatred rising. And of course, I do find in my work that anti-Semitic incidents tend to become more violent than perhaps some of the other forms of hatred. That's again a reason why I did focus on this subject in my report this time.
And can you identify any solutions to this? How can we change the situation?
Well, I advocate for a human rights-based approach to addressing this issue. I advocate for immediate and practical steps, including steps based on state obligations like enforcing laws, having laws in place, enforcing laws as well. At the same time, education is a key factor in ensuring that we address current issues and also prevent future occurrences of anti-Semitic hatred.
Now, you've been interested in the area of human rights for a very long time, even early in your career in the Maldives. You focused on human rights, you created the Maldives National Human Rights Commission. What was it that interested you in this topic in particular?
Well, I have always been quite offended by hatred. I've always been struck by how widespread anti-Semitism is, even in my own country where there have never been Jewish presence. But it's so widespread in every place you go. And like I said, I am very concerned in my mandate about rising global intolerance. And I think that the place to start off is the oldest hatred. Because if we learn how toxic anti-Semitism is, if we learn how toxic conspiracy theories, scapegoating are, then we begin to address all issues as well. So, of course, all require specific attention. And for me, anti-Semitism is a particularly pernicious form of hatred of all hatreds.
And before your current mandate, you were the Special Rapporteur for Human Rights in Iran. And you face a lot of criticism from the Iranian authorities when you're in that role. Why do you think that is?
I think every time someone speaks up for human rights, there'll be somebody who will not be happy with that. I think in Iran's case, they have a long history of not really objecting to human rights. You will recall the former Supreme Leader, Ayatollah Khomeini, had called human rights a Zionist conspiracy. The current Supreme Leader calls it the mumbo-jumbo of Satan's disciples. So you see where human rights stand in the country. So when you are documenting rights violations, when you are talking about victims who have no voice, then of course those in power don't like that. I think Iran finds that respecting human rights will actually destroy the regime because it stands upon gender hierarchy, it stands upon violation of women's rights, it stands upon human rights violations. So it goes to the core of their being to be challenged on human rights.
And how do you deal with that criticism?
Well, if you are speaking up for what is right, then you have to prepare to face the criticism that comes with it. And what enables me to go on is the fact that there are people who need attention. There are people who find value in the work I do, that despite opposition from governments, sometimes or very often they take notice and do the right thing. So when I wrote to the government of Iran, their public response would be denial, and of course, some hatred, I suppose. But then I do find almost every instance they take a step back. So there is, if you like, some impact of the work we do, and that keeps us going. I think it's important to highlight that I am not the UN, that I am an independent expert tasked by the UN to look at issues independently. So my report doesn't reflect the views of the UN. I report to the Human Rights Council and the Assembly here on what I find to be issues that the Council and the Assembly need to address. And that's because the Assembly here had passed a resolution in 1981 called the UN Declaration on Eliminating All Forms of Intolerance and of Discrimination Based on Religion or Belief. So my job is to see how states are implementing this or not doing that and offer ideas on how that may go forward. I am one of 51 or more experts who come from mostly academia, sometimes from the NGO sector, to advise member states on issues we think are important for them to look into.
Well, as you mentioned, you're an independent voice. You can say what you like. Do you have any thoughts about the countries that were elected to the Human Rights Council yesterday?
Yes, it's distressing to see countries that openly and with impunity violate human rights seek a space in the council, as we heard from Kofi Annan, now almost 10, 15 years back, when the council was set up 10 years back, the former commission had become a way in which states with rights violations would sit on the council commission to shield themselves from criticism. And we have had this problem in the past as well. So yesterday's elections did bring in some states which have very serious problems, who should not be having a voice in how we advance this, but should take a step back and look at how they can improve their own performance.
Is there something in your background that meant that you would be driven towards this kind of work?
I suppose, well, I grew up in a house of judges. My dad was a judge, my uncle was a judge, and my dad's friends were judges. So I grew up in a household where justice and justice principles were the normal banter. So I learned very early on how important that was and be able to speak up for the truth.
And looking forward, what do you think is going to be happening at a global level with regards to hate crimes, with regards to anti-Semitism? Are you hopeful that the situation will improve, or do you think it's going to get worse before it gets better?
Well, I think there is a growing number of investments by states in this area. I mean, at the present time, we're all struggling to find a solution to online hatred. What's the best way to address this without undermining general human rights standards? But I think there are now some answers emerging through tech solutions as well. So I think in the coming days, months, years, we will be better equipped to deal with online hatred. In terms of other forms of hatred, there is growing recognition that we have to act on this because it will undermine all societies. For example, UNESCO developed a study guide for policymakers on dealing with anti-Semitism last year. They're following up with a curriculum volume that will enable teachers to deal with classroom hatred. So we are beginning to have these steps taken. At the same time, a growing number of countries are investing in on voice for freedom of religion or belief, again, because they realize that it's time that even diplomats took the subject seriously. So I think there is growing awareness that we have to act, and that's the first step to getting something right.
And finally, you're based in the UK. The UK, at a political level, is dealing with problems of anti-Semitism. Have you been following that story, and what are your thoughts?
Well, the past 3 years in the UK, we've seen a rise of, I suppose, hatred, intolerance. The Brexit vote and what happened subsequently has actually given, I think, almost open season for some forms of hatred. And in that, of course, anti-Semitism has, again, like I said earlier, as it's an ugly head. The Labour Party is being investigated for complaints being ignored about anti-Semitism in the party. There have been senior resignations in the party. There have been some, even intra-party investigations. So there is a real problem that has to be looked into. And UK has a tradition of being a very tolerant society. It still is. But I think it's time that it took serious steps to address all these issues so that we don't regress further.